Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we round out Summer League chatter. Caleb Wilson is done. We salute him. We talk about his Rookie of the Year odds. We bounce around with other takeaways. We check in on LeBron James once again. And as I am in Miami, Giannis was introduced. Bobby Portis was introduced. Eric Spoelstra made some comments. We talked about it. We talked about the Heat as a whole. We then shift to the W side in the Golden State Valkyries. They deserve our conversation. They haven't lost in nearly a month. We talk about what's made this streak pop and if they are tier one title contenders now. And then Steve has some diabolical free throws for me that you're not going to want to miss. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to this episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I'm your host, Nikias Duncan. Joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, we have plenty of hoops to talk about. Let's jump right into the conversation. We start with a little bit more summer league. We circle back to Caleb Wilson, who has been fantastic throughout the summer league run, has played four games. He's not going to play later today as we record on a Friday morning, so he's officially done, but did play four. I think that's more than most of the top guys. Finishes his summer league, 23.5 points, 7.3 rebounds, shade under two assists, 1.3 steals, 2.5 blocks. And Steve, I have a little bit of trivia for you to kick things off before we get back into the analysis bag. Caleb Wilson, one of two players now to play at least four summer league games in his first stint, average at least 20 points, 7 rebounds, and 2 blocks. Can you guess who the other one is?
No.
Just a firm no. Omer Yurtseven, Miami Heat summer league legend. I think 20 and 11, over 2 blocks per game, 5-game run for Miami back in 2021. That was a fun one when I looked that up. I was like, I feel like nobody, not too many players have done what Caleb Wilson has done during his opening run. That is not a name that I expected. But I guess once you filter in like the games played thing, et cetera, that's where I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But he is now wrapped up, Steve. What are your overall impressions of the run? And where do you think Caleb Wilson goes from here?
Well, I didn't get to say hello because we had to get to an Omer Yurtseven question. So hello to the world. I think the biggest thing with Caleb Wilson is he answered questions and he raised the people's eyebrow. And I think of the top four, it felt like everyone had Caleb Wilson four, and he did not appreciate it or enjoy it or agree with it. And he's made that known in almost every moment of this summer league. One, I like him playing four games. I like Cam Boozer playing deeper in the summer league. That's a little bit different than we've seen in the recent trends, so salute to them. But I think there's so much you can point to with what he delivered. For me, it's like you can talk about the threes that he made. You could talk about the self-creation, the confidence, the compete level, the moxie, the dog mentality, if you will, is what stood out to me. Like the highlight dunks, I'm trying to dunk on everything. The grace that he has with his dunks, it's like a combination of like young KG with like some Sean Kemp in it. Like it's just fluid and bouncy and it's just a joyous thing to see. The self-creation that like I'm going to get downhill, I can get to my spots. I enjoyed watching him play basketball, which is a very fun thing for the Bulls going forward. And I think that probably one of my favorite plays for Caleb Wilson was in his last one, I think, against the Lakers. He, you know, his dribble, maybe it's not as tight as people want it. He got poked, tried to save it. They got it. He runs back, gets a block, blocks it to himself, pushes it the other way. I think he laid down a foundation to let the world know, I am here, and I'm here to elevate the Chicago Bulls. So I just want to give him a salute because that's not really what was expected. Like we saw so much from the top three early. Here comes Caleb Wilson, and then he didn't stop for almost a week straight. So it's like a tip of the cap to him for just like pronouncing, I am here, y'all got to deal with me.
Yeah, like I think I want to hang there for a minute because as simple as it may sound, the fact that we got to watch Caleb Wilson play this much basketball, I feel like is a little bit of a luxury with how these things are kind of handled now, where it's like you get the opening weekend, you get two games. I'm sorry, did you tie your shoe the wrong way? We are sitting you down. We will see you at training camp, or you could do your own personal workouts, et cetera. And so the fact that we got this four-game run, including a back-to-back, if I'm not mistaken, just like, it's refreshing. Obviously glad he didn't get hurt, but it's like, we actually just get a longer look at this guy. And like Caleb Wilson being asked about playing and being like, you know, I ain't gonna say these other guys don't love basketball, but I love playing basketball. I got a kick out of that. So just to bounce off of your dog mentality point, it's like, yeah, I'm here. I want to play. I want to play well. And he did so. I am intrigued that you already noted the handle being a little loose. I think that's going to be an obvious growth area for him. This is also why I'm excited to see him in the overall Bulls context, where you have more of Norm Powell handling things, Josh Giddey handling things. Matas Bustel is getting more on-ball opportunities to where Caleb can flash the self-creation in a way that isn't necessary. It becomes more of a bonus to everything else that he provides versus him needing to carry the load that he did during summer league. And I'm excited to see what that context is going to look like for him and what that does for his overall efficiency. One of the few things you could poke at is like 5 turnovers a game through these four games. I don't think that's going to be him once we actually get to his rookie season. And so the question I want to spin forward for you, Steve, is obviously there are grains of salt that you take when it comes to summer league play and what we see. Do you feel any differently about what his rookie of the year campaign could look like in Chicago?
No.
Okay.
I don't. I mean, here's the thing. If we're going to open the rookie of the year box, like, why would I feel differently about it? What you have to look at with the rookie of the year is one of these four is not going to be in the top three. One of these four is going to be on the outside looking in.
Mm-hmm.
Between Cam Boozer, Darren Peterson, AJ DeBonta, Caleb, one of them will not be in the top three this season. So prepare yourselves for that. So it's not necessarily that I feel like, oh, all of a sudden I feel differently about it. They're all going to be, it's going to be a rookie of the year race like none other, if all stay healthy, which I'm rooting for. So where are you at with his prospects? Because you're going to have to take one of these people off this list down the line.
Yeah, like I think for me, him flashing the self-creation the way that he did, again, I don't think it's going to be the same volume once we get to the regular season. But I do wonder if that opens up the usage for him a little bit more than I anticipated heading in to this season. And I think when you're thinking rookie of the year stuff, it is going to be a balance of obviously how well you play, but what on-ball opportunity are you going to get? Because this is still largely a box score award, for lack of a better way to frame it. And so as I'm envisioning the overall pace of Chicago, a slightly easier context, but maybe a little bit more self-creation opportunity than I would have anticipated before summer league started, I do feel a little better about what that could look like. I feel better about his chances, you know, to your point, of being within that top three for rookie of the year now. Because early on, it's just like, well, Darren's going to have the ball and he's going to be fun within his Utah context. AJ should get the ball a good bit, even with Trae Young being there. And Cam Boozer, like, he doesn't have, like, unquestioned usage usurper in Memphis. Like, that's going to be a spread to wealth there. I think there's an opportunity for him to kind of grab the bull by the horns for a little bit. Caleb Wilson, it was more heading in for me is going to be, okay, the defense should flash. He's going to be mostly a play finisher. I think there's a little bit more creation upside than I anticipated based on what we saw. He may get a little bit more leeway than I thought he would heading in. And so I feel better about what that can look like moving forward.
Why would Cam Boozer be the one who grabs the bulls by the horns when Caleb Wilson's right there? What just happened?
I guess Caleb Wilson is the
Caleb bull. Wilson yeah, should be the know. One who to grab the bull. Come on. Wake it up. Come on. I think here's the thing. So I, for me, think that you are just surprised by how good Caleb Wilson is. And that is the basis of this discussion. Because the description that you gave for Caleb Wilson, it's all of their roles. They're all going to be involved. They're all going to be around players who can make it easier. They all have a level of versatility. And so it's going to be who ends up being the loudest, which team ends up having the most success, which one of them has the most impact. I think it's what it's going to come down to. I don't know about how much winning all four teams are going to do, but I'm telling you, it's going to be a nasty split. I'm previewing this for you in July. It's going to be tough for people to deal with this, and you're going to get mad down the line because Cam Boozer has been tremendous. And, like, him playing this many summer league games and also, like, Memphis just quietly leaning into, oh, they're switching smalls onto you. Why don't you get in the post? And defenses are doubling. Why don't you do even more passing? Let's continue to get you off the move and get you in movement and let you space the floor and be versatile. Darren Peterson is going to be involved. We haven't even seen him with Will Hardy and the entire crew. We know what Will Hardy does offensively to kind of just put players in the best position possible. AJ DeBonta is going to will himself towards the basket and glide there. So,
he sure is.
What you're setting yourself up for is a tough rookie of the year race with four top candidates, and one of them will not be in the top three. So listen to me now, believe me later on, do whatever you like, but know it's going to get nasty.
It's going to get nasty indeed. I think the consolation prize there is that if they are healthy, this should be four of the five for all rookie first team at the very least, based on what we've seen in summer league and based on the pedigree heading in. And so you should have that. But yeah, I'm right there with you. The rookie of the year split is going to be nasty. Again, I think I probably agree with you. Surprising, specifically through like the on-ball contest, because I just didn't think anyone really anticipated this amount of pull-up shooting from Caleb Wilson, that kind of display. And so I don't know how much of that carries over into the regular season, like 42% from three on high volume. It's hard for anyone to do, much less rookie wings / rookie forwards. But that's where I'm like, ooh, this is a little bit more juice. This could be interesting to your point about the rookie of the year case. Part of it is just being loud. He's going to have the highlights. He's going to have the blocks. He's going to have the dunks. Heck, I just wrote earlier this week, giving out some summer league superlatives. I gave him the Blake Griffin Award for the dunk / toss in that he had earlier this week.
The what? So, the what?
The Blake Griffin Award.
So who got the Zach Randolph Award?
I don't know if you want. Unfortunately, I did not give out a Zach Randolph Award this time around. All right. Maybe if you run this back next year, I can do that.
Yeah, continue. Whatever, man.
Hey, listen, we can go through some summer league post-up stats if you want. Like that is a thing that I have access to. We can decide.
You
to
did enough. Right now. You did enough summer league statistical work earlier this week. We're fine.
You bring up full court pressure, and then it all goes haywire. Okay, let's get into some other summer league shout-outs, shall we, Steve? Are there any players that we've bounced around quite a bit over the last week and a half of guys that we've liked watching, guys that we're intrigued by? Is there anyone else that you would like to add to the list that we haven't discussed yet during summer league play?
Yeah. Who you got, though?
Let's go to the rookie class. Let's stick with the rookie class, rather. Let's go back to the lottery. I'm going to be on brand, Steve. We're going to flow with the Charlotte Hornets today. We're going to flow with the Brooklyn Nets today. On the Charlotte front, Hans Steinbach got his first start during summer league. Yeah, we're still on brand. We're still on brand. Hans Steinbach is coming off of his first start during summer league. 27 points, 15 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal against Milwaukee. Milwaukee won that game by 19. The Hornets won Hans minutes by 2. Plus 2 in a 19-point loss is just not supposed to happen in summer league play. It's kind of nuts. I think a lot of that is like the third quarter run they made early on. But either way, zooming out with his entire summer league run, 14 points, 9 boards, nearly 4 on the offensive glass, 2 assists, and around a block per game. I was more impressed than anything with the motor that he displayed. This is someone that obviously got busy on the offensive glass, but runs the floor every trip. I was mildly intrigued by the drives that he displayed. Doesn't mind hitting people. Like, there's just a physicality that he plays with, and there's a motor that continues to run that I think is going to fit in nicely with Charlotte. And as we think about what they did last year, particularly in 2026, a lot of bigs getting busy on the offensive glass, a lot of screening, a lot of overall activity. I think he's going to slide into that nicely. If you're telling me there's 48 minutes of Musa Diabate, or whatever minutes Hans Steinbach gets, you still have to deal with that kind of glass cleaning. That's going to be annoying for teams to have to deal with. And that's without mentioning Ryan Kalkbrenner, who's also quietly had a pretty solid summer, can provide the rim protection and can also get busy on the offensive glass. I do just love like the streamlining and the doubling down of that philosophy overall. But I'm intrigued by the offense. Like, they moved him around, gave him some elbow touches, let him do some delay stuff. Some of those exchanges got a little wonky for me in terms of just capturing guys as he's making the exchange or making the handoff with whoever guard was coming off. But I think there's easy, you know, fruit to grab on that front, easy growth area from him to get better with. And so I was intrigued by the big man in Charlotte. So I think I start there, Steve.
Okay, go ahead and tell me about the Brooklyn Nets backcourt. Do your little dance.
Do your little dance is crazy. I'll just say, because we haven't talked much about Mikal Brown Jr. yet. He's got some juice off the dribble that I enjoy. And he did not shoot well during his summer league run. So, like, the efficiency is going to have to improve once he gets into the more NBA-ready context. And I think I said it last week, like, very quietly, Yegor Jovan is stronger, has added weight, the drives just look better for him. So we'll leave him alone for now. But, no, there's a sauciness to the handle. He's able to get to spots, Brown Jr. is. As, like, a guard being able to display that early on is important to me. I do not want it to look difficult. Even if you miss shots, can you get to the shots? Can you get to the spots that you want to get to? He did that. I still have the Kings game in my head where, again, it wasn't like a loud box score game for him. But as we talked about last week, the Kings not afraid to put 2 on the ball in pick and roll, not afraid to ramp up the full court pressure. I thought he dealt with that relatively well. I liked how quickly he processed what he was getting to, how quickly he got the ball out. There was a rep, I think, in the first half of that game where he gets two on the ball, strings it out while going left, and then just fires a dart to the opposite corner. I'm just like, I like that. I like that he made that read. Can't remember if the three was made or not, but it's like, I like that you have that in the bag. I like that the trap didn't scare you. I like that you can mix in stringing it out while also just getting rid of the ball early with some dump offs, some bounce passes, et cetera. And so, like, there's a processing that I like. Again, there's a shiftiness with the ball in his hands that I like, and his ability to get to spots. There's like a versatility and a variety to the shots that he took that, again, he does have to make more of them moving forward. But I was impressed by the poise. And defensively, just got after it. Like, the steals numbers are what they are. But, like, anytime I'm watching a rookie guard on defense, it is naturally, what does the screen navigation look like? And how do you do containing drives from there? What do the recoveries look like? Screen navigation got wonky sometimes, but the recoveries and the angles that he took impressed me. For him being a rookie guard, absorb contact in the chest a lot better than I anticipated, especially for a rookie guard. And so was able to absorb contact, able to slide, able to contest without fouling. And then again, has the off-ball activity on top of that. And so I find myself very intrigued from what I saw. So I have now done my dance with the Charlotte Hornets and also the Brooklyn Nets.
No, you're not done. Shout out to the Nets backcourt, who's going to be very fun. Go ahead, tell us about the big fella in Phoenix. Let us know. Let the world know. Come on.
Oh, dear. Well, I will be quick with Kyle Maluaj. Because, buddy, flash for me last year for the Phoenix Suns. Where it's like, okay, he's going to screen, he's going to dive, he's going to block some shots, he may occasionally shoot. Comes out of the gate just firing above the break threes in Phoenix. I'm just like, okay. It is also nice that he knocked down 40% of them, but it's less about the percentage and more of the lack of hesitation that I saw. And so if you are legitimately going to be a pop and a roll threat, and there's like a lack of hesitation with that, that does open up a level of variety for me. And then sprinkling in some of the drives as well, get busy on the offensive glass, and defensively, active hands. I'm still trying to gather how I feel about his actual scheme versatility defensively. Like, how often do I want him to late switch? How often do I want him at the level, et cetera? But he does high point the ball very well. Like, there's a hand-eye coordination there in terms of shot challenging and doing so without finding himself in foul trouble often. And so it's like, okay, these are the building blocks that you want to see in year two. He's another guy I looked at and was like, you know what? If I don't see you anymore in summer league, I'm probably okay. I have seen what I needed to see from you, kind sir. And so I'll sprinkle in those quick thoughts there. How have you felt about the Maluaj experience in summer league?
Well, I think you saw more than you needed to see from him. I thought he had a really good summer. It's not easy. Like, summer league is typically a land where guards are able to kind of explore the space. Bigs have their charm within it. But I think he did what he was supposed to do. I'm going to go ahead and, you know, flip this narrative with quickness. I'm going to play with high effort. I'm going to rim run and transition. Throw me a lob if it's there. I'm going to work to improve in pick and roll. So I'm going to get to my roll quicker. I'm going to explode out. And if I get a catch on the short roll, I'm going to look to attack. And so the three-pointers is going to be the icing on top of the cake for a lot of people, being able to space the floor. But I think he put together a lot of, these are the things I have to build a foundation on if I want to get minutes down the line. And so having this kind of size, being able to, you know, protect the rim at times, being able to be active on both ends of the floor, you got to have that kind of self-awareness to understand what you're going to have to display to get to the next step of your career. And I think that's probably the most important part. The stats are fantastic. The consistency in summer league is great to see, but it's how he got there that's important to me. You play with that kind of energy and activity in the summer, that and you do it consistently enough to produce those kind of statistics to display that kind of impact, you ride that momentum, and when you come into camp, you know exactly what you have to do if you want to get more minutes. So that was kind of the charm for me. You want to talk about year two players, Nekias Duncan, because I had a whole bit, but then you changed the order of your people, so I don't know where we're at anymore. Let's talk about Jace Richardson. Because let me tell you about a person who just had a determination that I'm graduating from summer league one way or another. The next time you see me in Las Vegas, I'll be sitting across from all of you. I won't be in the game. You'll never see me again. And there's always an aspect of just being able to play and have those kind of flashes. Like, you've seen him play with the main roster and, oh, hey, you know what? His energy burst, quick bucket. Here, it was like, you know what? If I get the space, it's going up. If I get the drive, I'm attacking. So just the mindset kind of stood out to me. The scoring ability was great, but like how he decided there'd be a mix of a step back, a pull-up three, a catch and shoot, a strong drive and finish, that's understanding the assignment. And I think he worked himself to just get out of here as much as he could. Like, I'm done. Never again. You'll never see me again. The other person I want to talk about was Hugo Gonzalez. Because one, I didn't know that he was going to play in Summer League. I figured when I saw his name down, cool, you were hooping overseas. You're joining the team. You might get a couple practices in. That's fantastic. And then he played. And I was like, this is interesting. And the box score, I don't really care about the box score. There was not much hesitation from Hugo in that game. And I like to see that. Because I think there's a dynamic when you are someone who has contributed to main roster success. Summer League can help you kind of grow. Summer League contests can also, okay, I don't really have anything. The people around me aren't really playing at the same level. I'm not doing the same thing. He was determined. I'm going to go and do something. Give me a pick and roll, I'm getting downhill. I'm going to get in the paint. We're going to pass the ball. We're going to find someone. He just kind of found, like, I just really appreciated the aggression and just enjoying the experimentation. And, okay, I'm going to make quick decisions. I'm going to try and get downhill. I'm going to look for my own shot, too. And I think having that kind of rhythm, especially within the context of what Boston will be, he's got to have some wiggle room. We know Joe Mazzulla trusts his guys, so there's always going to be an opportunity to show and prove in Boston. So I liked Hugo Gonzalez going ahead and saying, you know what, let's have a chance. And so I think they should be really excited about that. You know what they should be excited about, guys?
What we got?
You know what people should be excited about? Chaz Lanier. He can shoot that rock. Think about this, right, guys? Okay. Think about this, guys. Detroit Pistons. You can say whatever you want about their offseason. What's the one thing they decided we need?
Shooting.
And guess what Chaz Lanier has done in Summer League?
Shot the leather off the ball.
Oh, y'all signing all these people? Okay, cool. Here's 9.8 three-pointers a night, and I'm going to make five of them. It's going up. Whatever space I have, the ball is going up. I'm letting it fly. Did I mishandle this handoff? Did I fumble my dribble? Do I have the opportunity to get my feet set and let it fly? Yes, up it goes. And so I think Detroit just kind of having people that understand, oh, this is what we need. I'll do it. I got you. Is an interesting concept to think about when you think about their offseason in the totality. Like, I know people were expecting a big swing and a big splash. And you know what? Let's get some more. I'm going to say it too. I'm going to say it to all the people that get mad about it. Let's get some more optionality. Yeah. Yeah. And let's get some more shooting and let's get ourselves in a stronger position to execute consistently. So I wanted to salute Chaz Lanier. And also, you know what? Since I'm here, and I got the rock.
Oh, yeah.
You know who could pass the rock?
Who?
We already talked about it. But Sergio De La Rea, boy. Woo-wee.
He's so good.
Woo. Nasty. I do want to give a tip of the cap to Bruce Thornton. Feel like he's having an underrated Summer League campaign. Because I feel like with all the noise, and there's a whole bunch of players playing and great teams, and no one's really thinking about the Rockets to a high degree, and Bruce Thornton's like, you know what? I'll get some buckets. I'll defend. I'll show that I can do a whole lot of things. It's going to be interesting to see if he earns time, how much time he earns in Houston. Because he's got some stuff to him that could translate as far as, you know what, I'll do my job. Don't you dare ask me to do my job because I'll do it. And so if anyone respects that, it's probably head coach Ime Udoka. So I'm Rockets fans know. Don't start yelling, why is Bruce Thornton in? You better enjoy the ride.
Hey, listen, if y'all were tired of Aaron Holiday, now you get Bruce Thornton, you're just going to have to hold that. I'm so sorry. You're just going to have to hold that. I'll just quickly add, on the Orlando front, I love the Jace Richardson shout, so salute to you, first and foremost. Second, Noah Pinda just quietly doing a little bit of everything during the Summer League games, a little quiet but fun subplot. So I want to make sure I said his name as well. Can I toss you a Phoenix-related free throw, Steve?
Before you do, Penda.
That's begrudgingly. That's a good shot. We'll let you. we'll let you live. I will give you a hat tip. I'm gonna turn my head first, and I will tip the hat anyway. But as far as the Phoenix free throw goes, who are you starting at center for them next year?
How is this a question?
What do you mean? They have three different options that you kind of start a game, set a tone with. Mark Williams if you want the size. Oso Iguodaro if you want the switchability. Malawat if you want like.
It's Mark Williams.
Okay.
Hands down. If he's healthy, it's Mark Williams. If he's not, sure, Oso Iguodaro, give it a shot.
Okay.
Clear hierarchy to me. Where are you at? You asked me the question instead of giving you a point. What you got?
I didn't have a point. I was just fascinated. I'm just like, Phoenix has three distinct bigs that they have invested in to varying degrees. Like, they drafted two, and they obviously traded for Mark Williams and then paid him, though the contract was a little bit lower than I anticipated. But I would imagine that is health-related more than anything. So that's where I was like, huh, it's cool that Phoenix has him optionality at the five. And so I just want to see where you were, who you like more.
You didn't mean that in your heart. You didn't got the optionality in your soul.
You know, to be honest with you, Steve, because I have seen like the clips and the tweets and things about like optionality becoming a word that people are annoyed by and stuff. I'm just like, I don't get it. I don't understand why the word bothers people as much as it does. Like, it's obviously a real thing. Enough people have said it, but I'm just like, that's why I don't feel it in my heart, because I just don't have any feeling towards the word itself. If you don't like optionality, you can just use a different synonym. Like, I don't get why there's beef around it. So, I don't know, man. That ain't me. You know what does actually rile me up a little bit, Steve? Can I vent for like 45 seconds before we transition?
Sure. One box, please, so I can drink some water.
The one box. Okay. I was joking before the show that this may end up being a words mean things rant day for Nikias Duncan. And so I understand that I might be annoying today. I might be pedantic today. We'll see. But I did some scrolling yesterday, Steve. And in multiple occasions, there were people talking about this year's rookie class and some of the things that they were showcasing during Summer League so far, a lot of excitement. And what kept popping up was some variation of the floor of this guy is insert player here, which is a very natural thing, very common thing that we do. We're talking about basketball players trying to get a feel for how good they can be and projecting forward. Nothing wrong with that. Two in particular caught my eye yesterday, Steve. We got a doubling down of Caleb Wilson's floor being Kevin Garnett. And then we got a Darren Peterson, the floor is Devin Booker. And I'm just like, I just want us to understand what that means. You are saying that the absolute worst case version of Caleb Wilson is like a top 30 player of all time. If that is your take, hold on to it. That just feels unfair to me. Is in a vacuum. I don't know if I want to put at worst this guy is going to be Kevin Garnett on the table. Like, that just feels a little steep for me. Or at the very least, if you're saying Kevin Garnett's name, like, you need to designate a year, an age. Is the worst version of Caleb Wilson going to be like year two Kevin Garnett? And that was like 17, 8, and 3, like in two blocks? Sure. And that's still a very good basketball player. Hey, man. You invoke the name of Kevin Garnett, and he's got Little Ticket as a nickname that's kind of brewing, so like that's gaining more steam. I just want us to be careful. That's all I want to say. And like, if the floor is Devin Booker, who's like an all NBA talent, multi-time all-star, et cetera, it's like, hey, that's high praise for Darren Peterson. And I am certainly in on the Darren Peterson experience if he stays healthy. I like a lot of what I saw during Summer League, but it is steep. So I just want us to be careful, because I don't want it to start here. And then if there are like rookie struggles, then it's like, well, this guy is X, Y, Z. Like, I don't, you know, just want to center the conversation a little bit. We got to be careful with some of these comparisons. That's all I got.
What do you mean? You want the opposite?
No.
You want to come out and say Caleb Wilson's floor is Darius Miles. Like, what you want? You can be mad either way.
I think there's a wide spectrum between the floor is Kevin Garnett and the floor is Darius Miles.
I just gave it to you. I gave you the wide spectrum. You don't like either of them. No, so why are we mad? Why are we mad? Why are we mad? Why are we mad?
Because of the spectrum doesn't have to be that, you know what I mean? Like, we don't have to pick the widest end of the spectrum. We don't have to start with the floor is KG. We also don't have to say the floor is Darius Miles. We can find something in the middle that still signifies this guy is good and we think he's going to be very good. Like, it ain't got to be.
So who's the Nikias Duncan stamped approved floor?
I don't know. I don't think it's floor is Hall of Famer. Like, that's That is the
okay.
That,
you don't. So you don't think it's Theo Ratliff either. So what you got?
No, no, I do not. I'm just saying, like, for Darren Peterson, could like the floor be like, could it be Beal? Maybe we go a tier below Booker. But can we ease it up a little bit? Is that fair?
Hey.
Versatile usage, can get downhill, can shoot the ball.
Now we're gonna. I'm gonna get my phone real quick. We're gonna send this out. We're gonna say Nekias Duncan says Darren Peterson is the next Bradley Beal. I just gotta move some money around. Hold on.
That's crazy. I'm gonna move some money around.
Hold on, just give me a second.
That is nasty. You know what? We are going to keep going. We're going to transition. That's unbelievable work from my co-host. Anyway, I am currently in an undisclosed location in Miami because I was in the building. For the
but that's disclosed.
No, they don't know where I'm staying. It's different. See, there are levels. You know what I mean? There's a spectrum. You know what I mean?
Oh, anyway. Never mind. Stun on me, buddy. There are levels to this. Sorry, big dog. Enjoy the suite. Oh my.
No suite.
Sorry, folks.
This guy here. I tell you what. What is this? There is no flex. I'm just saying that there was more information I could divulge. I did not. I kind of put it in the middle. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, Giannis was introduced. Bobby Portis was introduced. I was in the building. Got to ask some questions. So that part was cool.
Let's stay there. Let's stay right there real quick. Salute to Nekias Duncan for being there in Miami, for covering the initial press conference. I do very much enjoy the questions that you asked. And I want to talk about them before we get to these thoughts and these takeaways. Very quickly, you asked Bobby Portis. You were the first person to ask Bobby Portis a question. You were the first person to welcome Bobby Portis to Miami. And you sat there and called him one of the best post players at his position, a thing that I have never heard on this podcast, and asked him if his shot diet was going to change. How did we get there, Nekias Duncan?
Well, Steve, to peel the curtain back, how Miami structured the pressers is like they had player plus Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley. And so they'd have all three on stage. They opened up questions for Spo and Pat Riley first. And then after like 3 to 5 minutes of those guys taking questions, those two would leave. And then it's just the players and they're fielding questions from there. And so to the question that I asked Bobby Portis, which was essentially like, how do you blend or what have the conversations been about with blending the 3-point shooting and the spacing and the post play? That was a question that I wanted to ask Eric Spoelstra, who again, they were fielding questions first. So I wanted to ask Spo, like, hey, Bobby Portis can space. He shot over 40% for three last year. Bobby Portis was one of the most productive post players in the league. I think among 29 guys that logged 100 post-ups last year, he was fourth in terms of the points per possession generated on those trips. And so I was like, okay, how do you blend those two? Unfortunately, as the microphone was coming to me, Spo was finishing up answering a question. Pat Riley then says, all right, that's it for me and Spo. You can now send your questions to Mr. 95, referencing Bobby Portis' jersey number. And I was like, darn. I guess I have to wait another time to ask Spo that question. However, the microphone stayed with me. And thus, I now had the first question to Bobby Portis. I was like, well, I guess I'll ask Bobby Portis the question and just kind of spin it forward to what have the conversations with Spo been like with finding this blend.
None have happened. That's what he said. And not a single one has happened. I'm here in Miami. The vibes are high. Come on. We do this podcast. You ask me these questions. I prep you for these moments, and you don't be listening to me. You don't absorb it. Don't absorb what I say. I be trying to prepare you. Boy, I don't like first half challenges. And then you ask, and then you get the answer that I would have said anyways, because I'm trying to help you out. Now, to the next portion. Giannis Antetokounmpo, you asking about the style of play from Miami and how they change things and what it's going to look like. He said, I have gravity. I'm going to make plays for people who want to shoot. The vibes are high. So tell me about your impressions about Giannis. Because I got Spo, but I got Spo on deck in my brain, okay. Just so you know.
Okay, fair enough. But no, like, I think to your point, I was asking, like, how he feels he'll slot into the spacing and the cutting principles that Miami displayed. He talked about, to your point, the gravity that he has, and being able to slide into that. He said he's excited about the system. He's excited to learn it and learn his place within it. And, hey, I'm going to find shooters. I'm going to be able to get downhill, et cetera. I did kind of chuckle at like him saying, well, I'm not going to disclose what they actually did last year. If you watched basketball, if you know basketball, you kind of know what it was. I was like, fair enough. We will take that. But, you know, went into what he said there. And so I thought it was like a fine answer. It's like, okay, I like what they did. I think I fit into this. And that was just kind of that.
Yeah, man. When he got to that part, I'll leave it there. What's up? Whoa. So it's very funny. You did ask Eric Spoelstra, hey, how much zone are you going to use now that you got Giannis? And I find it, I love Spo's answer, because every year we talk about Miami Heat, and I tell you, boy, Miami is really good when they don't have to use zone, when they can just throw it out there when they need to, when they don't have to lean on it. And you know what? Depends on what the team is going to be. If they can defend man-to-man, they'd love to do that. And you tell the people what Eric Spoelstra told you about that zone, because he very quickly said, man, we'll see.
He started with, we'll see. And I will say, like, Eric Spoelstra, in my experience, has his days where, like, you will ask a question, here is 2 straight minutes of fire. And then on another day, or based on how the game went, you might ask the same type of question, and you might get 6 words, and that is just it. So once Eric Spoelstra started with, we'll see, I was like, oh, no. This could get problematic for me. I'm not going to learn anything. We are not going to have a clip to post. We're not going to have this being talked about on the podcast. But then he kept going. And I was like, ha, weight off the shoulders. It's like, you know, it's going to depend on the team. Like, Giannis has these great defensive instincts. I would imagine whenever we do go to zone, like, those instincts will carry it over. I'm so excited to see, like, what it could look like. He could play in different spots defensively. There are a lot of different coverages we could play him in general. It's like, okay, we got there. We landed the plane, much like Pat Riley alluded to, trading for Giannis, and also alluded to hoping to land another one in relation to a guy we're going to talk about a little bit later. But I was like, okay, that's fair. That is fair. And so we did get the zone as first of all.
No, good work. Good work. Proud of you. Everyone clap it up for Nakia. So now I know the Nakia maniacs are going to yell at me, but I'm trying to get you a little bit more vibey, get you some more vibey in your pocket so you have the balance. You know what I mean? Like, they was put the quote back up for the YouTube. I'll read it for the people listening on audio, but this is the scenario we'll be looking at. We got Pat Riley saying, hey, Spo, would you like to coach Giannis Antetokounmpo? And Spo's like, yes, I would. Like, yes, that's where we at right now. Like, we gotta match the vibes. We gotta, you know what I mean? Like, who was more excited for that moment? Spo once he realized, or Pat once he knew he could ask Spo this question? Like, we gotta, come on.
Yeah. Understood. Now, general point, there's a time and place for, like, the more granular things. And that was a time for, like, hey, how good does all of this feel? I think for me, a lot of that was being asked, so it's like, I don't want to, like, pile onto that, and I also am just generally curious about these kind of things, and, like, I don't know how often. But
you good? I'm just saying, have one in your back pocket.
I got you. And again, I'm not taking any offense or anything like that. I think it's fun to, like, talk through, like, the behind the scenes of this kind of thing. You know what I mean? I think for me, the balance is important. But the way that I generally approach is, like, I want to learn is kind of where I start with some of these things, which is why if I'm bouncing to stuff like this or from Zoom on the W side or whatever, I may be there. I'm not raising my hand unless there's something I'm just genuinely curious about. Like, I don't want to just, hey, I'm asking you something so you hear my voice and know that I'm here, type B. You know what I mean? And so for me, I had questions about, like, what is the zone usage going to look like? That kind of thing. How does Giannis slide into the space of principles? What is the Bobby Portis plan? What is that defensive fit going to look like? What do you envision there? Like, these are the kind of things that I had. And, like, not knowing how often I'm going to be in position to ask, because it's not like the Heat are holding, like, Zooms that I could kind of call into. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, this might be my shot to, like, try to get this stuff in. And so, like, that's where...
You see what he does, America? Shout out to him, man. I got an idea for you. Don't worry about it. You like, side note. You say you like to learn. I said shout out to Caleb Wilson for playing four games, and you immediately said the same thing after I was done. Learn my voice. No, I'm just kidding. So
I see you, yo.
So do you think the vibes being this high in Miami means anything other than we got
vibes are high?
Like, I mean, Pat's talking about Bam knocking people out and Spo smiled in a way I hadn't seen in 3.5 years.
Yeah, I was not expecting that. Like, shout out to Bam, who was just in the cut for the entire thing. And so they went Bobby Portis first, and then, like, a couple hours later, then had the Giannis portion just to get that little bit of background. But, like, Bam was just there, just chilling. Also, as we got, again, to start each presser, is like, Spo will probably take questions, and then it's the player. Afterwards, there was also just like two scrums, one for Spo and one for Riley afterwards. And so as we were doing the Spo portion where I asked him his own question, Bam comes up behind Spo, just does the bunny ears like six separate times before he leaves. And I'm just like, yeah, so this is just the kind of day that it's going to be. To answer your question directly, though, I do think there's a little bit more juice to this. Because there's the natural excitement of like, I'm in a new spot. I'm in Miami in particular. But like Bobby Portis is talking about like, hey, I was born to be a Heatle. I was always a Heat fan. I went viral during draft time as I got selected, and then people pulled up my old tweets about Derrick Rose because I was a Heat fan. I was like, ah, that's kind of crazy. Bobby Portis also asked about, I think last year or the year before, one of the playoff battles. So I think 2 years ago where you like bumped into Spo and you don't just have to like, hey, don't do that. And so you got to like tell the story about that. Giannis is talking about his mom posting a picture on Facebook and jump-starting rumors. He's like, hey, my mom's just gonna do that. It's not the last time it's gonna happen. It's just like the vibes were incredibly high. Also, there were like legit fans there. And I think Pat Riley referenced during the Bobby Portis portion that a lot of people came in from Arkansas. So I'd imagine this was like a Bobby contingent. But like before things even started, there were like multiple Bobby chants. And then before Giannis came in, there was a Giannis chant. And I was like, this is cool energy. But as you listen to their answers, like Giannis talked about how excited he is to work. He wants to be coached hard by Spo. Just saying all the Heat culture-y things that people will soak up. And Bobby Portis, just as down to earth and as blunt as possible about the way that he wants to work, the physicality that he's going to play with, like his will to win, et cetera. I think it's easy to kind of see how they're going to fit into this culturally. In addition to, like, this is the Bobby Portis skill set, and obviously this is the Giannis skill set. And so, like, getting that kind of buy-in, both of them kind of speaking about how excited they are to be there, how excited they are to be under Spo in particular, I feel like that bodes well. And something that Giannis asked about, because I think someone asked him a question about leadership in general, it was like, you know, this is going to start with me and Bam. And when you have two guys that work as hard as we do and that lead in the way that we do and just approach the work in the way that we do, it should be easier for everyone else to buy in and to fall in line. And so I think it's fair to be a little, if you were at an 8 heading in about the Miami experience, I think it's fair to move to like an 8.5, you know, 8.3, 8.5. I wouldn't say go from 8 to 10 because like it is an introductory presser at the end of the day. But I think it's fair to feel a little bit better based on what was said, just the overall vibe around the environment.
I like it. Thank you for your hard work there. And I think it's interesting the vibes are so high considering we still are trying to figure out who else is going to be on the team. But there's a reason. There's a reason for that. We got our LeBron James update. Festivals are happening. Podcasts are being recorded. And LeBron James, as of current recording, is still a free agent. Nikias, what do you think? What do we got?
I just want to say a shout out to friend of the program, Tyrese Halliburton, who early on in the live recording was like, hey, LeBron, just essentially, hey, where are you going? And LeBron's like, didn't we just talk about this in the back? And I'm just like, darn. And Tyrese also tells the story of like before it was official that LeBron was leaving the Lakers, he was trying to do some recruiting. And the response that he got from LeBron James was not just two laughing emojis, but two of the sideways face laughing emojis. And I'm just like, darn. You ain't want to give no thought to like, there's Pascal Siakam. Tyrese Halliburton's back healthy. We can get you with those hit aheads. We got Big Zoo back there. So, you know, he got the reputation, the rebounding. So you can probably leak out and stuff as well. the Pacers are a year and a half removed from a finals trip. You ain't get it. Like, you can say no, but laugh at the emoji? We get
the guys. The sideways emojis was the thought. I thought about this. I genuinely did. I could have gave you the regular crying one. I could have double tapped something. No. I thought about this, and I want you to know this is my response. And I appreciate you.
That's crazy. But yeah, so as of recording, we do not have a LeBron did say he's not going to have us waiting for too much. He ain't going to hold us up for too much longer. So we will see if that means we get some news over the weekend or.
Okay. I can be wrong. I can be loud and wrong here. One, I think it's funny that the teams continue to shuffle. And we go from 5 to 3 to 5 to 6. Here's Minnesota. Back to 3. It's down to these 3. And then it's 5 again. And I'm just like, okay, I get it. When does the large athletic tournament end, Nikias?
I think the soccer tournament ends on Sunday, I believe.
All right, you telling us on Monday. Call it now.
Call your bets. We're going to have something to either live react to on Monday or Tuesday morning pops up. It's like, hey, guys, guess what? LeBron James has signed with insert team here. That would be that'd be pretty nifty. But the update is that LeBron is.
Now, I will say, before we move on, mm-hmm. It was funny. He was like, well, I did lay the clues down. And I'm like, really? Did you? You know what it reminded me of when Stewie did 98 emojis every 2 days?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right. You just got to tell me where you're going.
Well, ain't nobody about to do all this during the COVID.
Shout out a friend of the show, Stewie. But I was like, I don't know, man. I can't wait to see where you're going. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that's what kind of fried about the Stewie, because the first one's like, you could kind of work through it. And then the second one came with like 16 emojis. I'm like, all right. Okay. Why do we increase the difficulty?
Hey, real quick. Adam Silver, the TV companies. LeBron, can you wrap this up, man?
I would like to finalize the schedule. We need to figure out who gets 32 national TV games and who gets 24.
Now, this is not a safe space, but I'm going to say this anyways, right? The schedule is pretty much good to go. It's about these TV games. Everybody, all of these TV companies said, hold on. No, we're no. Let's wait this one out.
Mm-hmm. For any of the college football 27 players, you can add to your what's giving us the boost, what's helping us with this recruiting real quick. Who's got we got the platinum? But, hey, LeBron's gonna give you the plus 50%. We just need to know which team we are applying this to, so we can send this bad boy out. Which also reminds me, I am still cracking up at like the NBA Cup stuff just being announced at the beginning of summer league. So, like, clearly they very much want to get this stuff out earlier than usual. And LeBron's just like, I don't know yet. We will see. Still has the NBA in the palm of his hands. Very impressive stuff. But we are going to take a break from here. And when we return, we shift to the W side. Hey, the Golden State Valkyries haven't lost the game in, like, 3 weeks. We should probably talk about this. We're going to talk about the Valkyries. We're going to talk about the All-Star Draft. We're going to have some fun. And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot as we shift to the WNBA side, Steve. And it's time to revisit the Golden State Valkyries, if for no other reason than because we are approaching a month since they have lost the basketball game. Lost to the Aces by double digits on June 21st. Since then, 8 straight wins. And this has once again been headlined by their insane defense. And we're going to get there because I have some film observations. I have some numbers I want to get to, et cetera. But Steve, I want to concede the floor to you. One, incredibly bright basketball mind. But two, we had a tier episode not too long ago. in which you had the Valkyries in the first tier. I had the Valkyries in the second tier for reasons that we'll discuss during this conversation. I would imagine you are feeling even better about having the Valkyries in tier one as they have gotten off to this win streak where they have the best defense in the league and they have the best net rating in the league since June 24th. How are you feeling about the way the Valkyries are playing right now?
I was told. Steve Jones was told the Golden State Valkyries were not a tier one team a month ago. I was told they're too offensively, they don't have enough offense. They can't score enough points. They can't do enough things. I was told by Coach Maple Syrup, the Valkyries aren't tier one. They don't have enough offense. They can't play well enough. I was told the defense doesn't win championships. And I told y'all from the start of this season, from the very beginning, the Golden State Valkyries are going to drive the ball. They're going to defend their tails off and they're going to shoot threes. And lo and behold, what have they done for the last month, Nikias? Drive the basketball, defend, and shoot threes. You want to get an easy basket? Not on our watch. You want to try and get in the paint? Absolutely not. Here is length. Here is defensive mindset. Here is help defense. Here's rotations. Here's a team playing together. This is what we do. This stretch, Nikias, they swept a five-game road trip. They beat the Dream three times in about 10 or so days. And they also beat the Liberty. And we're talking about a team that, yes, this is a great win streak. Their last five losses since May 28th. Three to the Aces, two to the Lynx. Those are the only teams that have beaten them since May 28th. What are we talking about? This is a dangerous team, and this is the part that we have to understand. Like, I understand that in this day and age, when you see a team that cannot do certain things offensively, it's easy to kind of just understand, well, you know what? Let's put this to the side. I don't truly believe in it. But we got to bring back the idea of different concepts being able to work and understand how different things can work potentially. Maybe you don't believe in it all the way, but we got a team who went on the road, and I'm just going to read you their opponent's points, right? 66, 75, 67, 83, 49, 75, 64, 75. How many people had fun playing the Golden State Valkyries? How many people enjoy playing this team on a nightly basis? And I think what they're doing is they're locking in their formula. Now, does this put them as we're going to be championship contenders? They're knocking on that door. The only problem is the top two teams are going to make them score. The top two teams are going to force them to score. They can compete with the Lynx, but the Lynx will find a way to score. And when they do, that means you have to score. So it puts them in a different position. That is a different type of game where, yes, you're going to defend. Yes, you're going to be annoying, but you are eventually going to be in a position where you're going to have to score the basketball. So they got to hone in on that. The Aces, ever since the Aces went to Ball Hollow last year, early in the season, it was a national TV game and the Valkyries blew them out. The Aces have never lost to the Valkyries since then. Not one time. You can look it up. Not a single time. So they got to figure out what they're going to do in those two. But they put themselves in a position to get the benefits of their formula. It's different when it's 6-seed Valkyries, 4-seed Valkyries, 2-seed Valkyries. Like, the playoffs are going to be hard no matter what, because if you look at the W standings, it's just nonsense. The New York Liberty are the 8th seed. This is a league that's fighting for their lives. Everyone, it's nasty and we keep running out. But I think with the Valkyries, they know who they are. And it's a team effort. I think everyone's kind of rolling to a high degree. You got Kia Stokes blocking shots. You got Gabby Williams making offensive play. You got Xander Lissini always staying confident. Kayla Thornton and Tip Hayes know exactly what they're supposed to do. Janelle Salon can come in, play 3, 4, 5. Whatever you need me to do, I got you. Kayla Charles does her job. Caitlin Chen, people didn't understand how good Caitlin Chen was. I'm not sure. I remember watching Caitlin Chen in college before she even transferred. I was like, oh, Caitlin Chen is nice. Caitlin Chen transfers. Oh, Caitlin Chen is nice. Caitlyn Jenner plays in the W. Oh, Caitlyn Jenner is nice. And now Caitlyn Jenner just does it every night. She can hoop. She's there for a reason. And so I think what I'm looking forward to seeing is how much this win streak, how much buy-in do they get out of it? Because when you're looking at their next five games, they play Washington Saturday, Monday at home. Then, you know, they play Phoenix Mercury on the 29th. Then they have two games in Toronto at Valhalla. So it's a long, elongated stretch, but you have a chance to potentially add some more to it. Where are you, Nikias Duncan, at with the Golden State Valkyries? Because I'm very intrigued to see where your mind is at. Because I know you had some questions about this team.
Mm-hmm.
You had some questions about this team.
And I guess to jumpstart it, when we had the tier conversation a month or so ago, and I had the Valkyries in my second tier, I think it was them and the Atlanta Dream where I was like, I believe in this defense. This defense is championship level. The half-court offense is giving me some pause before I can get them to tier one. To start with this defense, and I ended up tweeting about it, not only have they been the best defense in the league this year overall, largely off of what this stretch has been, it's a 92.8 defensive rating over the last eight games, Steve. That is not how any of this is supposed to work. They have been annoying all year long. Even on the nights where their defense gets dings or teams hit threes against them, as you mentioned, like the aces and links can find pockets to score, you have to work hard to get to those looks generally still. Like, they're just consistently annoying every night. And during this eight-game win streak, they have been incredibly rude to the Atlanta Dream, as you've already mentioned. But just in general, you don't get to breathe against this Valkyries group. You want to run an action with your primary? It's Veronica Burton. You want to run something for or with your primary, like, wing score? It's Gabby Williams. And you're not going to have a good time dealing with either. If by some chance you beat them, you got to see Kayla Thornton at the nail. Zan Lazzini isn't like a great defender, but she's a positionally sound one. And she's also just long as heck, which very quickly, 13-5 the Valkyries are since they moved Zan Lazzini into the starting lineup, which is going to put that to the side for a little bit, but just wanted to note that. But that's length you got to deal with. And if by some chance you beat all of that, as you've already mentioned, Steve, it's Kia Stokes, who's averaging 2.5 blocks per game during this eight-game winning streak, who has just been, on a per-minute basis, probably one of the three best defenders in the league. Like, the only thing that keeps her out of serious DPOY or all-defense conversations is the fact that the offensive limitations mean she's only playing around 20 to 22 minutes a game. That's literally it. If we are just factoring in what she does defensively, what she's asked to do, how the great point of attack defenders funnel things into her and she's able to challenge things and disrupt things, she's been, I think she's just been the best interior defender in basketball this year. Just flat out. That's how good she has been within this system. And so when you have that up top, you got congested in the middle, and you got Kia Stokes in the back end, where are you supposed to score? It is absurd what they've been able to do. And some things I want to look up in regards to the defense, Steve, just on the team-wide front during this win streak. I wanted to see, like, what the Valkyries were doing compared to what the league average is since June 24th, which is when the win streak started. Expected shot quality, that coming from second spectrum, that factors in where the shot's coming from, what type of shot it is, who's defending the shot, how contested it is, et cetera. A lot of different factors into what your expected shot quality is. It's a 46.3 for the Golden State Valkyries, expected effective field goal percentage of 46.3. The league average is 48.5, so about 2 points better than league average in terms of what you are expected to make on your shot attempts against them. Heavy contest rate, which is just not how often you're just contesting a shot, but you're getting like a super tight contest on the shot. About 57% of Golden State's contests are registered as a heavy contest. The league average is 52.5. So over 4 percentage points higher than the league average. What they're allowing on drives during this run, 0.85 points per possession. The league average is a flat point per possession. Much better than league average. How often they help on drives, about 69%, 2 percentage points higher than the league average. In pick and roll, allowing a shade under 0.8 points per possession on any trip. Because of what I mentioned, Veronica Burton up top, Gabby Williams up top. You get some subs in, Kyla Charles can still be annoying, Caitlin Chen's getting after it, and you just have all the size on the back end. League average is 0.92. They have been so much better than everybody else during this run. It is a doubling down on what makes them good to begin with. Then we shift to the other end, Steve. And what is frying me, to circle back to your original question, is that as the Valkyries have been this dominant, as they have the best net rating in the league during this win streak, as they have by far the best defense in the league during this stretch, they are 11th in offensive rating during this run.
As you mentioned, they drive. Now hold on. Before you get to the offense part, because beautiful setup by you. Well done, Nikias. I'm right now, while you were talking about the defense and what they've been doing, I was on the Game Time app trying to figure out, when do I need to make this trip to Valhalla? How do I get there? Do I want to wait for the tempo? Do I want to wait for them to play the Lynx there? Do I want to go and see when they go ahead and play the Fire in the Fire Pit? I'm not sure. But I want to see them play in person. Now, let's, as the Duncan turns, go to the offensive end of the floor.
Duncan turns. I think the fact that they are 11th during the stretch, I think it's kind of like a beauty in the eye of the beholder. Because I think on one hand, it reinforces your thought that like it almost doesn't matter that the offense has been this because our defense is so good, we can win these games. We can put us in the position to beat anybody. And so if you are pro Valkyries, then it's like, this is proof that we have low-hanging fruit to grab during this run. I think they're 6 and 3-point attempts. They're only shooting 32% from three during this run. And some of our best shooters are underperforming during this run. Our offense can and should be better just from a shot-making standpoint. And our defense is still allowing us to win this amount of games and to have the best net rating in the league over the stretch. Like, that is the positive end. The other end, or the more skeptical end, is they haven't, like, actually solved the question. This is another example of our defense being great, but we knew the defense was great. Can you get both things to happen at the same time? And so for me, the defense has been so strong, like it's probably fair for me to, I probably should just move them into my tier one based on what this has been. But like, I do still have the half court offense questions in the back of my brain. And actually a fun free throw that I was trying to work through before the show, Steve, that I want to toss your way. Yeah. What do you have more faith in as of July 17th? We obviously have a lot more season to go, so I want to be fair to you. But as of today, mm-hmm. as of this recording, what do you have more faith in? The Golden State Valkyries offense or the Las Vegas Aces defense?
That's a Steve coded question. That's real targeted behavior from you, Nikias Duncan. What do I have more faith in? The Valkyries offense or the Aces defense? Okay, let's break this down. Let's answer this out loud. The Valkyries know what they want to do offensively despite their limitations. They have people who can get in the paint. They're going to take threes. It will get stiff. They may not be, they have a much, are they creating for each other on top of having to create their own shots? I'm not sure. The Aces defense can get not fun, but they have enough bones behind it to where it works. And they have more offensive firepower. So if they score, there's more wiggle room for their defense. I'll probably lean the Aces defense because of that point.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the Aces defense in like a 6-game series as far as what I would trust more.
Okay. Like, I think that's fair. Because like when we had the tier conversation a month or so ago, I was like, well, the Lynx are absolutely here. And like the Aces are getting my respect. They're up here. But you know, we talked about it. I was like, I don't really love where the Aces defense is right now. And so it's been fine because they're still winning games. They've been like one of the top three offenses in the league. And like, it's gotten better since then. But I was like, this defense is where I could justify moving them to tier two based on just what they've done so far this year without giving them the defending championship vote or whatever. And so that's why like I was in a headlock with this because I knew we were going to revisit the tier thing. I'm just like, I want to be fair and I want to be balanced about this. It's like, if I have Valkyries questions and they're winning all these games, but the offense has been this, if you remember, Steve, when the Aces went on what, the 6-game win streak, I think them and the Liberty were on the win streak at the same time. When they were on that win streak, they had easily the best offense in the league. And their defensive rating, I think, was like 9th at the time during that run. And so it's like, it's a very similar thing for me. And so for me, it's like, okay, based on the sample that we have, I either need to have the Aces and the Valkyries in tier one, or I need to have both of them in tier two at this point, because the sample has grown and we still have the same outline of this Valkyries defense is nuts and their offense can pop on different nights. And that gives them a formula. The Aces offense is nuts. Their defense can pop on certain nights and there's your formula.
What do you trust more, the Golden State Valkyries offense or the Atlanta Dream's offense?
Ooh.
Right back at you, buddy. Yeah.
That's a good. No, that's a good one. I like that.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Okay. I think to your earlier point, there is a general know-how to the Valkyries offense. Like, we at least know what looks we're going to get. Either we know what looks we're going to generate on the high end, or because teams continue to switch against the Valkyries at a very high rate, we know what we're going to have to get to. We know how we're going to have to win in these moments. With the Atlanta Dream, sometimes switches bog them down. Other times, they're just mashing and getting to the free throw line a bunch, or they're shot making. Sometimes they can access their movement. Other times is Jordan Canada standing in the same place trying to figure out who's setting the off-ball screen, who's setting the pick and roll, and now Jordan Canada has to save possession because they don't know what they're trying to do. Sometimes Ryan Howard is getting switches. Sometimes she's getting two on the ball. Sometimes when she gets two on the ball, they're playing out of that and flowing. Other times it's turnover city, and now the Dream are in a hole. I don't know what I'm getting from Atlanta's offense on every night, and that is frustrating to me at this stage. But I do still have the general buffer of Bree Jones is going to come back and give them some level of stability. But I think based on the sample that we have, I have to pick the Valkyries right now. They just kind of has to be the answer as of today.
Now think about how things have shifted, right? The Dream have done they still have done a lot of good things. I think their compete level is very high this season. I don't think we've seen the top tier of what their offense can be, which is funny because last year that's what they had. The offense was what brought them to the dance, and then we'll work to figure it out, and then offense falls short, we lose in the playoffs. The dynamic is fun. Now, the Valkyries being the 2 seed, like, obviously the Aces, they're only up by a half game, but they put themselves in the top four. And, like, the dance between the Valkyries, the Aces, and the Wings is going to be fun to watch over the next few days. If you're the Valkyries, and I'll apologize to the New York Liberty, they are the 7 seed, because the Mystics lost to the Fire. Which, by the way, real very quickly, off on a tangent, how did the Fire and the Mystics have a 4-overtime thriller, 124-123, and then the next time they play each other, they combine for, I'm not great at math, but off the top of my head, like 124-5? Like, they combine together to score that. How does that work? But if you're the Valkyries, right, who would you want in the first round? Fever, Liberty, Mystics, or expansion team, why?
I think it's the Mystics or expansion team, why? If you're saying, like, who would they rather have, I think it's between those options, because I think they have the personnel to deal with, like, the drives and the general flow that the tempo want to get to if it's them. The Mystics, you know how I feel about their offense at this point.
Delete that.
Where it's like I don't think you have the same will the Valkyrie score enough questions in a Mystic series. Though the Mystics defense has been nuts, but it's just like, okay, I don't know if the Mystics are going to score enough to do the thing. Which, while we're doing brief tangents related to the Washington Mystics, I came into this very excited to talk about the Mystics in their defense today, and we can still hit on, like, how impressive the defense has been. And then that Fire game happened, and, like, a lot of this is we are turning the ball over an ungodly amount of times, and the Fire just get to play off of that. And then also, I think they went 2 of 21 from three, so it's just a lot of runouts in that game. So not super in lag of what the Mystics defense has been over the stretch. But it's like, darn, bro, this is, like, the 8th time during the season on this podcast where it's like, hey, let's talk about this team. Oh, they lost the night before. We still need to talk about what they've been doing over this stretch. So just from a podcast perspective, it's like, darn, a win would have been cool so we could, like, fully hammer home this Mystics group continuing to fight and they're in the playoff picture. There's my brief aside. Hey. We may circle back to the Mystics. Hey. We'll see.
But shout out to the Young and the Restless. Let's go. Continue on with your Valkyries.
The Young and the Restless is nuts. But yeah, I think that's where I would land on that front. Now, among the Liberty. A Liberty matchup would be fascinating.
Because your usage of the word fascinating can mean so many different things. I don't know if this means, like, a fascinating basketball series. I don't know if this means the Valkyries about to clothesline the Liberty. I don't know. When you say the word fascinating, it gives me anxiety. What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't want to induce anxiety by using the fascinating. I do find I'm using that word more often. And I largely mean in the literal sense, like, oh, this is captivating to me. Like, I want to see this. Now, to your point, it can be, I want to see this because this could get crazy, or I have no idea what to expect. I think for me, it's more of the latter. Like, I don't know what to expect, because this could be a series where the Valkyries are like, hi, New York. You haven't really gotten healthy throughout the year. You haven't really found consistent flow. Here's 4 to 5 games, or even 3 games, we'll see. But here's 3 to 5 games that let's just put you in a headlock, and your offense is just never going to figure out. It could be that. It could also be the Liberty end the season on like a 5 out of 6 stretch or something like that, to win 5 of their last 6 to get into the playoffs. And then despite them being seeded lower than the Valkyries, the Liberty are hitting their potential because of all the skill that they have. And then we're back to, well, the Liberty are defending. The Liberty have the Valkyries in the box. Can the Valkyries score enough? Oh, no. And then the Valkyries are the upset in the round one, though the Liberty, from a talent perspective, probably one of the 2 or 3 best teams in the league. That's where I'm just like, that would actually be a series I want to see, because it would be easy to map out, oh, the Valkyries just took them out of there, or, oh, the Liberty just took them out of there.
No, I'm with you. I think you saying that prompted a thought in my head about the Valkyries playoff run. I think the offense has its question marks. No doubt about that. They have talent to work through it. They're going to have to generate shots like on their own and for each other. But their ability to have size and length to take away other teams' guards, are we underrating how impactful that could be in the playoffs? Now, it's not an automatic. But the amount of defenders they can throw at teams' best guards to disrupt, you know, especially when you look at the teams, some of these teams like Fever with Caitlin Clark, the Liberty with Sabrina. Like, this is not Mike saying their best player, but I'm just thinking about the players that the Valkyries could just say, not you, you're going to have a bad time. Could it be Ryan Howard, you're not going to have fun? Can we poke at Paige? Like, Jackie Young and or Chelsea Gray, you're not going to, like, they have personnel that could just swamp one of the 2 best guards in these playoff teams. How important is that, do you think, going into this stretch?
No, I think that is very important, actually, because I think we can go down the line with the Aces, who the Aces have had success against the Valkyries. A lot of that has been Asia Wilson just kind of figured it out. And I remember asking her after the most recent Valkyries wins, like, hey, so you had that first meeting last year where you're seeing bodies, didn't shoot well, all the things. And since then, I think she was averaging like something like 28-12 or 28-13 against the Valkyries since that game. It's like, do you feel like you are more comfortable with the way that the Valkyries want to help, et cetera? Jackie has had like pull up 3 games, but it hasn't been a stretch of games against the Valkyries where she's just living in the paint against the Valkyries. So to that point, hey, the process can get kind of wonky here if it's just perimeter based. Plus, anytime there's a pick and roll involving a 4 for the Golden State Valkyries, you are getting jumped. That is just happening. And then with Kia Stokes, sometimes she's at the level, sometimes she's at a drop, might be a late switch, whatever. There's just like a level of versatility that the Valkyries can tap into that may not shut down Jackie in the traditional sense, but it'll be enough. It may goad her into some of her worst habits offensively, to where it's never going to be Jackie turned the ball over 6 times. It's going to be Jackie received a screen, took a dribble, and then picked up her dribble. And that allowed the defense to reset. She didn't turn it over, but the advantage is gone. And so, like, enough of that, plus we are putting length on Chelsea Gray, that could be enough to your degree where it's like, okay, well, Asia, you just got to average 30 in the series. Now, this is Asia Wilson, so she could just do that. But from a process standpoint, like, yeah, that is a thing that can happen. Against Paige, like, That's been a fun battle between those two teams this year, where it's like, in some aspects, Paige, where's the aggression? What's going on here? You got to work really hard. And then it's like, actually give me the ball in the middle of the floor. I'm just scoring over you. It's like, oh, what is that going to look like? We will see. And so, like, yeah, I think this could be very, I like that question. I like that point. Like, the Valkyries do just have a ceiling with Veronica and Gabby Williams in particular, to where y'all can't get into your offense. Now you have to win in the paint to a degree. Now, the Valkyries can't get foul happy sometimes. So, like, there are avenues, but it makes it that much difficult, that much more difficult. Can I, before we transition, can I sprinkle in some perimeter-based stats for the Golden State Valkyries that I had for you?
Very quickly, just know I have a question on the back end. So if you want to one-box Nikias or get his graphic up, do whatever you please to our fine production team. Like, do what you got to do, big dog. Give us the numbers. Give us the numbers.
The quarterbacking from Steve. I just wanted to, like, double down on just how good Veronica Burton and Gabby Williams have been defensively. So just very quickly, stick with me here. During this win streak, 0.72 points per possession allowed by Golden State on possessions where Veronica Burton is defending a drive. That is at 0.55 points per possession when Gabby Williams is defending a drive. Both insane numbers. With Veronica Burton is defending a dribble handoff, 0.55 points per possession, which is comically low. Gabby Williams at 0.68, which is also comically low. And when they defend a pick and roll, it's 0.78 when it's Veronica Burton. It's 0.61 when it's Gabby Williams. When Veronica Burton and Kia Stokes defend a pick and roll together, it's 0.64 points per possession. When Gabby Williams and Kia Stokes defend a pick and roll together, it is 0.24 points per possession, Steve. I think that is literally one or two buckets when those two have defended a pick and roll during this 8-game win streak. That is not how that is supposed to work at all. So sorry for the numbers dump for people that aren't into that. But it's like you watch those games, you get to see them destructing things. And when I actually saw the numbers and all of that is just under 0.8. And again, Gabby and Kia together, 26 picks, 0.24. It feels like a typo when you see stuff like that. And so I just want to sprinkle that in while we're on what those two could do, what Gabby and Veronica could do together defensively.
Okay. Well, number one, never apologize for being yourself. And that goes to everyone that's listening. Be you, be great. Don't worry about it. Number two, here's my Valkyries question, right?
Okay.
You know me. I very firmly, and history has backed me up, if you win Coach of the Year, you are not going to win it the next year. We have not seen a back-to-back Coach of the Year since Van Chancellor in the Houston Comets. Has not happened. Natalie Nicasse would, if the Valkyries get the one seed, does she go back-to-back? Or is this just Cheryl Reeves' trophy? Not because Cheryl Reeves is awesome. Like, obviously a four-time Coach of the Year. Like, and the Lynx have been great. But if the Valkyries were to get the one seed, would that be the only scenario where Nat goes back-to-back?
I think one seed is probably the only way she goes back-to-back. Especially if you're looking at, like, the head-to-head stuff, the tiebreakers. Like, I think if they finish two, like, it's just going to be behind Minnesota with how those games have gone. So that's probably the only way to get it. But as I always tell you, Steve, either on air or off air, when we talk about Coach of the Year, I just hope this is Natalie Nicasse one, because these are the things that they do defensively, and this is how they bother you. This is how she schemes things up, and this is how they scheme up their offense. Versus, man, I sure didn't think the Valkyries were going to be any good. It must be Natalie Nicasse. Like, I just want her to be properly celebrated for what she's done with this team.
If she should. She should. And that, I framed it as the one seed, because I think if they get the one seed, that would grab that audience in a different way. But Coach Nicasse has stamped this team with an identity, and through whatever the storm has been, whatever the criticism has been, has doubled down on that identity and getting these players to believe in what they do and consistently do it. Like, I don't think everyone understands how hard it is to play this style every single night, right? Like, it's not easy to get that level of buy-in every single night, but you also get the balance of freedom offensively to be yourself, to attack. You see an aggression from players out there as far as, okay, you may not like the process completely with the half-court offense, but do you ever feel like they don't know where the attacks are? At worst case scenario, the Valkyries, it just kind of feels like we didn't make shots. They know exactly what they want to try to get to, and I think players are thriving within that. That's why I like the Gabby Williams fit as far as, okay, we've always asked, is Gabby Williams going to be unlocked? Have we asked that a single time this year?
Not really.
No, not really. We have not. And I'm pulling up because a friend of the show, Megan McPeak, was talking about how the Valkyries play defense and their athleticism and their length and their size, their willingness to communicate and their rotations. And they do that every night, Nikias. So that's not an easy style of play to replicate. So that's why I kind of just tip the cap and hope people understand, yes, they're doing it, but as this season has progressed, they are believing in it and buying in a different way.
Two things before we pivot, because we're getting ready to get out of here, Steve. One, to circle back to your dream and Valkyrie's offense question, very funny. I was looking up what the offensive ratings were during this win streak or since June 24th. As mentioned earlier, the Valkyries 11th in offense during this win streak. The Atlanta Dream are 12th So salute to you for just absolutely nailing that question. That is very well done. And then second, you mentioned Caitlin Chen a little bit earlier, but during his win streak, 9.6 points per game off the bench, converting 66% of her shots overall, which is absurd. And a lot of that is off the drives. 1.19 points per possession on trips featuring a Caitlin Chen drive, which is second behind Paige Beckers for players that have driven at least 50 times during this run. 1.35 points per possession on direct plays, which is just Caitlin is shooting off of these drives, or she has an assist opportunity off of these drives. Also second behind Paige Beckers, which once again reinforces the fact that Paige has been insane during this recent stretch. She's obviously been very good all year long. So want to sprinkle that in before we pivot. Before we get out of here, Steve, want to concede the floor?
I have some free throws. Oh, the first one. Okay. Mm-hmm. Stronger case. Paige Beckers for MVP or AZ Fudd for Rookie of the Year?
Ooh. Oh, I like that.
It's a nasty one.
That is a nasty one. Ooh, Lord. Oh, that's good. That's good. Oh, okay. I would probably say... AZ, because I do think, like, while Olivia Miles is the front runner, AZ has just kind of amplified things in Dallas offensively with her shooting, her movement, screening, ghost screening, etc. Defensively, we're going to have a separate segment about the AZ defense and the way this discussed. I think she has had a very good defensive season for a rookie. I think she's had a very good defensive season overall, and the stock numbers are there. I think there are some areas missing before I can get too firm. She should be all defense or she should be in the D-boy conversation. Like, that feels rich for me as of July 17th. Maybe that changes as the sample grows. But there is two-way impact here. And I think as of last check, Steve, AZ Fudd just has, like, the best on-off differential on the Dallas Wings, period. Which is just kind of nuts for a rookie to do. And obviously, the Wings are winning games. This isn't like the Layla Lacan thing last year to where they're, like, neutral or slight negative with her on, and then they just got blasted in her when she was off. She's amplifying and impacting winning. And so I think you can build out a two-way case for AZ a little bit easier than like Paige over Asia right now. Though I will say Paige has been nuts. The Wings keep winning. If you were adding in the Wings were this last year, now they're this year, she's going to have that bump. And she has just been the best fourth quarter player in basketball this year. I think that's fair to say. So like, you can map out some stuff for Paige, but I think I'd probably lean AZ being a little bit easier to build out than award-winning case.
All right. I have another free throw. Who's third in Rookie of the Year, and why is it not Flauje Johnson?
Third in Rookie of the Year. Oh, man. I think my initial why is it not Flauje, it would probably be – it's going to be nitpicky because it's rookie stuff. But I think it's going to be general like efficiency processing and then like some of the off-ball defense in particular. It's probably where she's not firm third. But I do feel like third has just kind of shifted for me throughout the year. If you would have asked me this a little bit ago, it'd be like, oh, well, this is just Pauline Astier. Like, what are we talking about? But we'll just say that things have kind of shifted for her as of late, as the Liberty are trying to find themselves. So like, I don't know if that's my firm answer right now. Honestly, Steve, I'd want to think a little bit deeper about this when we have like an actual rookie conversation. I've probably been moved more by Awa. That's probably like she moves me third for me. But like I would have to double check like where are the games played in the minutes at right now with her. But she's been so good. I guess actually that probably answers the Flauje question. Yeah. I don't know if Flauje's been the best Storm rookie. Yeah.
Understood. I hear you, Sleepy Brown. Kelsey Mitchell or Marina Mabry?
Oh dear. I will lean. Darn. I guess I'll lean Marina a little bit over with the playmaking bump. Kelsey's been so good, dude. And like,
yes!
I think I feel a little bit better about the Marina playmaking. I think that's what would give her the slight edge for me. Kelsey's been insane during this run. And like the defense that she was playing at the beginning of the year, we will say complimentary. She is not playing that right now. Like, it is very, is more, much closer to like neutral, slight positive now than when she started the year. Cause I was like, oh, what is any of this? Kelsey, all due respect. And she just continues to get bucket after bucket after bucket after bucket after bucket after bucket. And so that's a good question, though.
I know. Kelsey, I did that for a bit, but Kelsey Mitchell has been incredible. My final question, my final free throw before we get out of here. Carla Late or Jessica Shepherd?
Ooh, is this most improved coded?
Nope. Not giving you any hints.
Oh, dear. If it is most improved, I think Carla has like the year two thing, so I don't really know how I feel about that. Like, it's probably Jess. It's probably Jess. I probably lean Jess.
So you respect the grill work over defense?
Thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel for all our NBA work. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports main YouTube channel for all of our WNBA work. If you would like, you can follow me on socials at Nikias NBA. You can find Steve's at. I'm not even saying it. You can find it. We follow each other. You can find him if you want to. His name's Steve. That's all I'm giving you. We'll catch y'all next week. We hope you enjoy your weekend.